I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the shop.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
Zucker for the Wild. Thought about dumping it in. He'll carry it in. He kicks it wide. And forced out. Let me get a save. Rebound. Score on the wraparound. What a play by Zucker. Now it comes back out to the line. Jared Spurgeon has it. Spurgeon sets it across. One timer. Score. What a shot. Deep Allen on the power play, 2-0 Wild. Off the board, it's picked up by Granlund. He's got an empty net from center ice. He scores! But Kyle Granlund into the open net. Koivu trying to tie it up, getting some help from Parise. It comes to center ice. Hommanville for the open net. He'll score! Two empty net goals for the Wild, and now they have a 4-2 lead.
Yeah, that's a good start for us. I think we have to make sure that we use this game. We look at the video, and there's certainly some areas where we know that we can be better. A lot of good things to take from it, for sure.
Indeed, a lot of good things to take from that. Playoff fever is right here in the state of hockey. The Minnesota Wild lead the St. Louis Blues 1-0 in their first-round Stanley Cup playoff series. From St. Louis, the St. Paul Pioneer Press dispatch writer, of course, that's Chad Graff standing on the phone, and he has had plenty to absorb here as the playoffs are full underway. We've got not one, but 2 hours of action-packed radio for you here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. We will have writers from across the country, across North America, who cover these teams, checking in on their series. We'll be talking about the Wild series with the Blues, and we'll hear from Mike Yost some more. We'll hear a little bit from Jake Allen, as well as David Backus, as we'll hear them from their hushed locker room. Chad, good morning to you.
Good morning. It's an exciting time here in St. Louis, and I got to tell you, it's only game one. The Wild game won game one, but holy smokes, there is a lot of pressure in this city and a lot of pressure on the St. Louis Blues right now to win game two this afternoon.
We're going to be bringing in Jeremy Rutherford. He from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and he's going to talk on that topic, certainly. You could feel when it went up 1-0 even early when Jake Allen kind of gave in and had that miscue when he fell off the right post there that allowed the Jason Zucker wraparound. You could feel the hush in the crowd and the tension. And then at 2-0, it really felt bizarre in there. Could you feel that too?
Absolutely. I mean, there were stretches when the home fans were blues. Late in the second period, down 2-0, and even early in the third, the fans were getting a little bit restless. In the back of everybody's mind here is the fact that the last 2 years, the Blues have been one of the best regular season teams and then have fallen apart for whatever reason. Maybe it's poor goaltending, maybe it's the coaching not working, maybe it's the leadership not working. For whatever reason, this team's MO is being very, very good in the regular season and then falling apart early in the playoffs. So if the Wild go up 2-0 today, it's going to be absolute panic here for the Blues fans.
And one of the things that the Wild did so well was get the puck out of the zone. It was off the end boards, to the wings, and up ice. And I think those that watched the game can recall, Minnesota entered the offensive zone with a number of different looks and opportunities, but they always had a weak side guy. It felt like there was a 3-on-2 all night long.
It did. I mean, that was the amazing thing was there were so many chances where normally you would see a team dump the puck after going over the red line, and the Wild just skated into the offensive zone. You know, maybe they chipped it down low after that. Maybe they held it. This is just a team that has so much more skill than it used to that, guys on every line, even Justin Fontaine on the fourth line, are able to carry the puck into the zone, which they haven't always been able to do. So we've talked a ton about the depth over the last month. And I think that's one of the biggest things is now suddenly you've got Nino Niederreiter on the third line. You've got Justin Fontaine on the fourth line. And these are guys who are more than capable of skating the puck into the zone and getting a shot on net. And that, you know, we saw that's how Jason Zucker scored his first goal.
Well, and then you get the power play goal, and we talked about the special teams coming into this one. The St. Louis Blues with the great regular season power play, top five. I think they were fourth in the league. The Wild, though, at the number one penalty kill. Minnesota's power play, though, a stumbling 27th entering the postseason, really looked good the other night.
It did. I think the biggest thing, and we've seen it in flashes, but having Matt Dumba at the point, and he, of course, the guy who scored the power play goal, having him at the point just gives the Wild something that they haven't had. Ryan Suter does some good things on the power play, but he just doesn't have that shot. He doesn't have that blast that really only Dumba and Scandella have. And for most of the year, Yo's been hesitant to put Scandella on the power play because he's been so good defensively that he doesn't want him to use all his energy on the power play. Similar to Jonas Brodin. But the nice thing with Matt Dumba is this is an offensive guy first. So there's no, you know, hesitation in putting Matt Dumba out there for the power play. This is why Matt Dumba is with the Wild right now. And I think that he'll grow into a better two-way player, but there's no question that Matt Dumba's strength right now is his offensive ability and his shot from the point. It does not get old watching. It has been remarkable since he's been up here.
For a guy that's smallish, it's incredible how hard his shot is and how quick it gets through. And the other part in Scandella, I'd always kind of scratched my head saying, you know, that guy gets pucks through. I've always been surprised they haven't relied on him up on the blue line as a shooting defenseman.
I was especially surprised maybe mid-January or so as things were struggling. It wasn't looking good. And, you know, really, you know, they're just the power play was not working at all. And throughout all of that, you know, was adamant that he really liked Scandella's play two-way, like, you know, right after the power play, he could throw Brodin and Scandella out, which is, you know, often a time when an opposing team will throw out top players and try to quickly counter. So he always liked having that ability. But, you know, I know that Suter can play as many minutes as you want, but, you know, it was well discussed from fans on up to, you know, people within the organization of putting somebody else on the point for the power play. And Ryan Suter is still on the point for the top power play, but the nice thing is for the Wild is that when that first power play unit comes off the ice, here comes Matt Dumba and Jared Spurgeon and in my opinion, a pretty good second unit.
You asked Mike Yeo about this being a template game on Thursday night. Match that four times, and do they win the series? And this is what he had to say.
We want to play a speed game. There's no secret about that. You know, I think that's when we're at our best. I think that we did some things that allowed us at certain times to get to our speed and to have it be effective. And there was other times that we, you know, we were bringing pucks back into our end, and that's not exactly conducive to playing a north speed game. And you know, at different times we played in our own zone and we gave them some opportunities because of that. But for the most part, I thought we did a good job establishing the speed game.
First period was a nice start. Second period was lights out. They hold the Blues to four shots on goal. Third period, though, here come the Blues.
That third period, I mean, I think you expected the Blues to come out a little bit, playing a strong game. The second period was as good as I think I've seen the Wild match up with St. Louis, you know, since I came here a little over 2 years ago. That was textbook how you play the Blues, and that's why I asked the question is, if they can play even remotely like that second period, they're going to win more hockey games than they're going to lose against the Blues. You know, we'll see. I think that today there's nothing for the Wild to lose in the sense that they've already erased home ice advantage. They've already won a game on the road here in St. Louis. All the pressure is really on St. Louis, and they need to come out absolutely flying today. The Blues can simply not afford to lose this game. So I think there's much more riding on this game for them. So I expect to see them coming out, you know, with their hair on fire, flying around, hitting everything that moves. And if the Blues do not do that, I think there are some big issues.
Did you really say home ice advantage? Did you go there?
Well, it's one of, you know, I've got, you know, probably a list of writer cliches that I have to, you know, mix into a radio show every now and then.
So check it off. No, I get that, but I'm just saying with Minnesota, they've played so darn well on the road, they just don't lose on the road, except for that last St. Louis game. It was so many in a row and such an impressive run there. They pick up again where they've left off in that category. I'm saying they win four on the road, lose three at home. Of course, I'm joking, everybody. I'm joking, but I had to take a shot there. But, you know, again, The offensive zone forecheck was very good in the first and even better in the second. And on cut three, Mike Yeo talked about that.
You know, first period, I thought we were checking decently. You know, we were in pretty good position, but I don't know that we were tight and quite as aggressive as, you know, in terms of our pressure. But I thought the second period, we were much better with the tightness of our game, you know, as far as how we were pressuring and creating turnovers. But the biggest thing is the spending time in the offensive zone. Again, I looked at the first period and we were doing a lot of good things, but we were one and done a lot in the offensive zone. And second period, we were hanging on to the puck. We were moving our feet a little bit more down there. And because of that, we drew some power plays and got some good momentum from that.
They did get good momentum from that. And I think what they're going to need to do is continue that through. Obviously, in the third period, when you're down two goals, you're sending defensemen, you're pinching and you're creating all sorts of trouble, taking your chances. And it worked for the Blues. And when you're playing a tighter game, when you're ahead or not tied or that type of game, or maybe one goal down, you don't put that kind of pressure in the offensive zone like the Blues did. But I do agree with you. The Wild better be prepared for a very physical team and a building that should be pretty electric down there. However, if there's one bad thing that happens, it's going to compound itself. It's almost the Madison Square Garden curse, I like to call it, where, you know, suddenly they turn on you as fast as they do that, or Philly for the same matter. Feels the same way in St. Louis.
Well, or even, you know, to be honest, early January in St. Paul, where between either Darcy Kuemper and Nicholas Backstrom, the second one of them let in a goal, it was like, here we go again. The sky is falling. It's pouring rain. And that's what it could be like here. If the Wild come out and score early again, I think that would be a tremendous boost for them, because that sort of quiets the home crowd. And things will get pretty testy after that, I think, if that happens.
Jordan Lee. Oh, go ahead.
One of the other things that I think the Wild should be very pleased with, and, you know, you look at how they've played in St. Louis. They had one regulation win since 2007 in St. Louis. So it was important for them to get that, but just important in the way that they played. They outshot the Blues 29-21. And I think that when they were stumbling a little bit at the end of the regular season, just in that, you know, last 3 weeks or so, they were getting outshot by teams, which they aren't doing when they're playing well. So I thought that was a good indicator. And also that the Wild did such a good job of blocking shots. They blocked 20 shots. Jared Spurgeon blocked 5 shots. They were always in front of the net. And that's, you know, where St. Louis makes its money and wins its games, is by camping out in front of the crease.
Well, they definitely took care of the man behind the mask. By the way, that is a great story you wrote on Devan Dubnyk in your paper dated back on Thursday. The coverage has just stepped up a notch in the Pioneer Press. Check that out at TwinCities.com. It's a terrific article on Devan Dubnyk. You get to know the man much better. And when he was called upon, he was quite good, too.
He was very good. It was such an interesting storyline for him, because this is Devan Dubnyk, a former first-round pick, a guy who's been in the league for a number of years, but because a large number of those were with the Edmonton Oilers, he has zero playoff experience. His last playoff experience, he wasn't even in the playoffs in the AHL. His last playoff experience was in the ECHL, so while he's done incredible things and put himself in the discussion for MVP and the Vezina, he's done so many amazing things, but still there was the question of, is this a goalie who can perform in the playoffs? And right or wrong, it was a question that had to be asked, and I think that he put that to bed in Game 1.
One thing the Wild will have to deal with will be the oncoming St. Louis Blues, and their breakout up the ice was so good, cut 4.
Yeah, I mean, that's our game plan, you know, and that has to be consistent. And it's, you don't have a choice against a team like that. They're physical. That's one thing, but they're physical with structure and in good structure. So, you know, if you're bringing pucks back into your end, and it's going to be tough, because you're going to have to come through guys, you know, more guys than you would have had the first opportunity. So I think once we started to be a little bit quicker moving pucks north, and I think that our speed became a little bit more of a factor.
And getting that speed as a factor and keeping the puck possession, that keeps Dubnyk out of work for a while, at least. So I think it's critical for them to stay what they have. One of the things they've done is they took Jordan Leopold, inserted him over Nate Prosser. Was that a surprise to you?
It was a little bit of a surprise. Nate Prosser was so good for such a long stretch as the Wild turned things around before Jordan Leopold came. And then Nate Prosser suffered an injury that kept him out of the lineup for 4 weeks. And Prosser played sporadically, you know, a few games here and then out for a few games for the last couple weeks. So it was a little bit surprising just because of how well Prosser had played during that stretch. But at the same time, I think there are two factors into it. One, Prosser, you know, I think is still getting back to speed. His games that he had after his injury weren't quite as good as the ones during that long stretch. And, you know, remember, this is Nate Prosser who played in a top four role with the Wild when Scandella was out and Spurgeon was out and some Brodin was out. So he is very capable of playing. But, you know, alongside Matt Dumba, I think the team wants somebody who's going to get the puck, get it out of the zone quickly. Jordan Leopold does that. I'm also fascinated by the dynamic of Jordan Leopold and Matt Dumba have become pretty good friends. They went and got ice cream together with Jordan Leopold's kids before the playoffs. And, you know, Matt Dumba grew up watching Jordan Leopold in Calgary. So he's been sitting next to him and asking so many questions about the playoffs because game one, of course, was Matt Dumba's first playoff. So Jordan Leopold has done a lot of good things, but I also think that a big factor is what Jordan Leopold can help Matt Dumba do and help him learn as the playoffs go on.
The father-son combo dialed in. Jeremy Rutherford's going to join us. We're going to get more into this Blues-Wild series. He's from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch coming up around the bend on the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
He's a speed demon there. Good play by him. Should have controlled the rebound a little bit better, but it was a good move by him.
Jake Allen post game after his club loses 4-2. Couple of empty netters for the Wild, some little flurry of goals at the end of the game, but nonetheless, it was pretty much over before all of that began anyway. But the Wild with the 1-0 series lead against the St. Louis Blues. Now we're going to bring in the St. Louis perspective here with Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Now, what I can term Jeremy, a friend of the show.
How you guys doing?
Good,
hey,
good.
Those goals at the end weren't nothing. Chad and I had to rewrite the bottoms of our stories.
I know. It was hilarious. I was thinking about the depression Chad was probably going through right there. Because what'd you guys have, about 5 minutes to get it done?
if we had that.
Well, so I checked both of them out, and I noticed the first draft had hardly any quotes. It was beautiful.
So, you guys doing all right?
Terrific. How about you?
Yeah, we're good. Getting ready for game two here. Obviously, a thrilling game one. I think we saw some of the things that we expected to see, the Minnesota Wild showing off their speed, especially on that Zucker goal, and then get the big blast from Dumba later on, and the Blues had trouble with them, so they've spent the last day or so trying to regroup and see what they need to do and get ready for this Wild game.
Do you think they're going to change, Jeremy, the way they're going to play to combat that speed?
I don't think so. I think the only thing the Blues are going to try to change is put some energy into it, put some urgency into it. We didn't see that in game one. It's kind of correlated with their checking game. Ken Hitchcock touched on this yesterday, guys. Several times throughout the year, the Blues just look flat and they don't check, and it just leads to the rest of their game not looking very good. And for whatever reason, I don't know how you can let that happen, the Blues let it happen in game one of the playoffs. And so I think the Wild had a big part to do with that, obviously getting that first goal, and then kind of Ken Hitchcock said, really doing a good job of boxing out in front of the net, keeping the Blues to the outside, as the old cliche goes. And the Blues didn't try to work and get inside. They just followed along and fired shots into shin pads and so on and so forth, and didn't work as hard as they needed to. So I don't think they'll try to change anything, you know, structurally or fundamentally or anything like that. They're just going to have to put some more effort into it.
What was practice like yesterday? Of course, Wild and Blues in practice at the same place, so I can't speak to that. So were guys feeling the pressure? Were they talking about it being a long series? What was practice like?
Yeah, the practice yesterday, it was actually, you know, pretty brisk, and everybody was involved. And, you know, Chad, normally down the stretch there, if you're playing games every other day, a lot of guys wouldn't be on the ice, but of course this is playoff time, so you got to be. So, you know, the Blues put the work in that they needed to do. And in terms of their demeanor, their attitude, to be honest, I think they're a little more relaxed than you would think, being down 1-0, losing a game at home. And I really do think it's because of the maturity level from the past couple of years, kind of going through this and seeing what can happen in a playoff series. You know, I pointed this out, I think, last time I talked to you guys, but, you know, they had been up 2-0 on L.A., lost four straight, 2-0 on Chicago last year, lost four straight. So they realize nothing is won or lost in one hockey game. They just want to keep their heads level and do what they can in this next game to kind of pull even. So I don't think there was any panic is what I'm saying.
Speaking of that, we have a soundbite from David Backus, the captain, who talked about his team getting better as the game went on and looking forward to game two.
Well, I think we got better as the game went on. I don't know if it was nerves or too much time off or what, but we didn't bring our A game from the drop of the puck, and they're able to score a goal early in, you know, first.
Years, we saw it last year with the Wild as, you know, an unofficial seventh seed winning. We've seen it with the LA Kings winning the entire thing as an eighth seed. It's really quite unpredictable, and you have to do a lot of things right in the playoffs. So I just don't see any team. I think the closest that we'll get to a dynasty is what the LA Kings had that ended this season when they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, you really make a very strong point there. When you think about an NBA playoff first round, if you're a 6, 7, 8 seed, goodbye. It was nice having you. In this, you can be an 8 seed and win the Stanley Cup. We've seen it happen often since the lockout era. It's been very impressive, and I think that's really what the salary cap has done for the National Hockey League, is it's really leveled the playing field, and you're going to have your moments of success, and you're going to have your moments of decline. Interestingly enough, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs and the St. Louis Blues that I believe are both on the longest strings without winning a cup.
I believe that is correct. In fact, I know that's correct. That, I guess, contributes to the pressure that the Blues have here. And I think the other thing today is sort of, you know, after today, every playoff series will have two games. So what I think is very exciting is that in these other series, that is the only series, Montreal and Ottawa, that is 2-0 right now. Chicago, Nashville is 1-1. Vancouver, Calgary, as we talked about, is 1-1. Washington, and we'll get Washington's perspective later in the show, but Washington and Long Island is 1-1. So a lot of good matchups, and I would not be surprised if you know, a lot of these that are today, Wild, Blues, Ducks, Winnipeg, Tampa, Detroit, New York, Pittsburgh, I wouldn't be surprised if the other team now basically holds serve and wins that game, and we have a bunch of matchups at 1-1 turning into a best-of-five series.
Well, stay tuned. We're going to hear from a series that may mean a lot to the Minnesota Wild, who are up 1-0 on the St. Louis Blues. We'll find out what's happening in Nashville as we'll hear from them and get their perspective. Adam Vignan is next, coming up on the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Delayed penalty coming up against Nashville. And the puck wide in front. And the score by Strutter. Santorelli. 5 seconds. He's... Minds are falling here. And now down the left wing side. The shot of the score by Kane. Rivera for Cody Franson. Franson a shot. Rebound by Smith. He scores. Backhander.
It was just insane in Nashville, Tennessee last night as the Preds come back and defeat the Chicago Blackhawks by a score of 6-2, a very leaky Corey Crawford. Some of those goals he couldn't do much about, but nonetheless, it has not been the start to the Stanley Cup playoffs that the former Stanley Cup champion goaltender would be looking for. We are happy to bring in Adam Vignan from the Nashville, Tennessee, and he's their beat writer. Adam, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Terrific, thank you. We've got a lot to talk about, obviously. The Predators come back with a big win against the Blackhawks, even the series at one, but the loss was Shea Weber. Do you have an update on his status at all?
Not yet. They're scheduled to practice at noon Central Time today, but it didn't look good when it happened on the ice. It seemed like whether it be his right leg, knee, ankle, something seemed to get tangled up in Brandon Saad when the two collided at by the end boards in the second period. Shea limped to the dressing room, favoring his right leg, and didn't return. This is a team that's already missing Mike Fisher as well with a lower body injury. Of course, Shea Weber's injury has been classified as lower body as well. So those are two very important members of the Predators team. They were able to survive without Shea for half the game yesterday and even the series at one. But if they go to Chicago without him and he's out for the series or out even for a couple games, that's a huge loss for them. He eats up so many minutes. He plays in all situations. He faces the toughest competition. They have a deep defensive core, so they may be better suited to handle it than another team would, but it's still a gigantic loss if he can't play.
the series, of course, Nashville and Chicago. The winner of the St. Louis Blues Minnesota Wild series will play one of these two teams. Last night was quite the game. What was it like in Nashville after Patrick Kane scores to tie the game at 2-2 before Nashville goes on a great run? Patrick Kane ties the game at 2-2 on a goal where there were six Blackhawks on the ice, and then you look at the celebration after, and there are six Blackhawks in the celebration.
How did he get there?
Nashville.
It was certainly an interesting scene. The crowd, of course, as you can expect, was livid, and so was Coach Peter Laviolette, who left the back of the bench, stood by the front of the bench, and was just shouting at whatever official was within earshot, trying to get their attention and trying to argue his case. But yes, you mentioned that there were six guys on the ice and there were six players celebrating in the celebratory huddle. I don't know how the officials missed that. Pecorino told me after the game that, yeah, he knew right away that there were six guys on the ice. He saw the bench. They were livid and shouting, and they were going crazy, as he said. But in the heat of the moment, the way the game goes, you can't complain about it. You just have to move on from it. And they did in a big way. They scored three goals within 2 minutes and 19 seconds. The end of the third period, the fastest three goals in franchise playoff history to put the Blackhawks away. And even the series, they really needed to win that game last night. The second period has been a bugaboo for them lately. They had, in their previous 11 games prior to last night, they had a minus 14 goal differential in the second period, which was the worst of the NHL. So when Patrick Kane scores, and then Shea Weber was injured moments before Patrick Kane's goal, I think within 2 minutes after Shea was hurt, Patrick Kane scored. So it was not a good turn of events. I think there was a little tension in the crowd last night, but the Predators rebounded. The crowd was ecstatic at the end of the game. Is their first win in almost 3 weeks. I think they'll take it.
Yeah, I would too. Corey Crawford, talk about his play. So on the final 5-on-3, you've got Mike Ribeiro in the corner. He could have tucked one up in the shelf again. I mean, but you know, they clearly were just running out the clock. What is going on with him? I've always called him a statue. He just does not move very well. It almost looks like his gear is too big for him. I'm a goaltender, so I'm going to call it out. But I don't know. He just looks kind of confused out there. But he's giving up the shelf so much that they're going up top on him a lot. Any talk about Darling getting a start in Chicago? I mean, he's not going to do that, is he?
Well, that's a really good question. As you mentioned, they were really sort of victimizing Corey Crawford up high. Seemed like every goal was going there. The best example was Colin Wilson's first goal, just roofed it over his shoulder on a power play in the first period. Coach Quenneville said between games 1 and 2 that it was a quote-unquote no-brainer to go back to Corey Crawford, despite the fact that in relief, Scott Darling set an NHL playoff record in game 1. Playing 67 minutes and 44 seconds without allowing a goal in a relief appearance. That was the longest stretch of time without allowing a goal in a relief appearance in NHL playoff history. But after you saw what happened last night, I mean, Joel Quenneville was not as committal to putting back Corey Crawford. He eventually said, you know, we'll see which goaltender we think gives us the best chance to win. And when you have Corey Crawford, whose goals against average in the first two games of the series is 6.75 and a save percentage of 81, you're going home with a series tie. Yes, they served with their purpose. They split in the first two games in Nashville. But Corey Crawford, who has had a hell of a postseason run the last time the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, he just hasn't been playing well. You know, if you want to switch the mojo, I think you really do need to go back to Scott Darling. I didn't think that the decision was wrong to go back to Crawford in game 2, but after the way that the game sort of unraveled in front of him and behind him in the third period, I think it might be a smart decision to go with Scott Darling.
I think it'll definitely be a smart decision. I'd be blown away if Corey Crawford gets back in there. Who would have thought come game 3 that we might not see a game 3 without Shea Weber and without Corey Crawford? But Adam, you've been in Nashville for a month or so now after covering the Washington Capitals. Basically, once you got there, the Predators started to slow down a little bit, and because of that, are the only team, according to Vegas, the only team with home ice that is not favored in their series. Was last night closer to the type of game that you think they were playing pretty much before your arrival in Nashville?
Yeah, I think so. people are quick to tell me that the day that I was announced as the new Predators beat reporter is the day that their 6-week slump started, where they lost 15 of 21 to end the regular season. So I've definitely shouldered some blame for that. But yeah, I think the first period in game one and the last half of the game in game two looked like the Predators I had heard about all season when I was in Washington. This juggernaut, offensive, aggressive team that was just sort of, you know, dominating opponents. I hadn't seen that for, you know, in my month there. And I think I'm starting to see it now. I can see why this team was so good, for 5 months. When they're really on their game, they're really on. It was sort of, I was sort of incredulous to see just how fast that game got out of hand last night. Because even Pierre Laviolette said after the game, we were preparing, you know, it was under 5 minutes or so, we were preparing to manage the bench for an empty net situation where we were going to be holding on to a 3-2 lead. All of a sudden it's 6-2 and you don't have to worry about it anymore. I think it surprised everybody. But the Predators, despite the fact that they weren't winning, and they hadn't won a game since clinching a playoff spot on March 28th, they were steadfast in their attitude that, yeah, we're not playing well right now, but we're not getting the results right now, but we're playing well. And of course, when you get to the playoffs, you can't really be happy with the effort if you're not getting the wins, because there's no margin for error. But they definitely turned it around. The key is to just keep it going. They've proven that they can play with the best teams in the NHL, and for a while they were the best team in the NHL. But if they can continue to play like they did last night and bottle that up, to use the old cliche, I think they'll be okay going forward.
Well, consistency is always the key and the trick of the game, obviously. And by the way, we're speaking with Adam Vinion. He is the beat writer of the Nashville Tennessean, the Nashville Predators, Chicago Blackhawks, tied at one. You're listening to the On the Ice radio show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Minnesota Wild lead the St. Louis Blues 1-0 in their series game two set today. That'll be at 2:00 in St. Louis. Chad Graff is on the line in St. Louis, as he, of course, is the St. Paul Pioneer Press beat writer and co-host of this program. And Adam, one of the topics that that you had in your paper was the balanced scoring of this Nashville team. And it never really seems as though there's one guy on a given night that puts the puck in the net. And I think that's a scary proposition for playoff foes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what made this team so dangerous, especially with a coach like Pierre Laviolette, who historically is a very aggressive coach who likes to get after it. To see Colin Wilson sort of explode in these first two games is good for Nashville. He had 3 goals in 2 games, and 34 games after the All-Star break, he only had 6. But to see Craig Smith get 2 goals, you see Philip Forsberg score his first career playoff goal. He's also the youngest player in the franchise history to score a playoff goal. And that's the key. They're getting that scoring from everywhere. That's what made them so dangerous. They had 4 players with 20 goals, I think 8 with at least 15, offense and defense. That's what made them so good. And then it had them among the highest scoring teams in the NHL for a long period of time. That's the kind of effort you need in the postseason. We always talk about how, while the stars shine when they need to, it's usually those second tier guys who pick up the slack in the postseason and really lead a team to victory if they can. So to get the kind of scoring they did last night from all different kinds of players, Mike Santorelli also threw in a goal. That's the kind of game Nashville wants to play, that aggressive puck possession, domineering sort of game where they essentially suffocate teams offensively. And that was the key to the series for me, was both of these teams, the Chicago and Nashville, like to play that aggressive puck possession game. Whoever was going to do it better is going to win the series. I think despite the fact that the series is tied at 1, I think Nashville has done it better in both games. They didn't get the result in game 1, blowing a 3-0 lead. But I think overall, to echo their sentiment, if they play the way they've played for the most part in these first 2 games, I think they're going to be a tough team to stop.
Adam, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you'll be willing to join us next week as we continue our pilgrimage through the Stanley Cup playoffs. Your work, by the way, can be seen at the Tennessean.com, right? That's Tennessean.com, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, great. Adam, thank you. We'll be talking to you soon. We appreciate your time out here today, and safe travels to Chicago.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the game today.
Thank you. When we come back, we're going to hear from the Edmonton Suns' Derek Van Deest. He is covering this Blues and the Wild. We'll get his take and his take on the Western Conference playoffs as they continue to move their way through the early stages of the first round. This is the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Lord,